This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. For salespeople, having clarity of purpose and values in their work is one of the key drivers that will sustain them and help them succeed. Purpose is about determining and maintaining focus on what's most important in your life and work. But how can you better tap into that purpose? And just as importantly, how can you avoid some of the traps that can inhibit your effectiveness and even derail your success? Greg Vanarek is an award-winning author, TEDx speaker, and coach on personal development, life design, and leadership. He joins me today on this episode of Mental Selling, your favorite sales podcast. Greg, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Will, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk a lot today about why values alignment and aligning yourself with your strengths and what matters to you with the organization matters. Everyone talks about having purpose and values alignment and a vision for what they want to achieve. It's important to clarify those things, though, in alignment with your organization's purpose and values and vision, though, isn't it?
Alignment between the inside and the outside, or between you and the organization, is critical. Otherwise, there's a gap there and you can fall into. And I think that's going to be very demotivating, especially if you don't pay attention to that gap. It starts getting wider and wider, and eventually you might fall into that gap. I've had an experience with that where initially with an organization, there was a great alignment. It was really exciting. It was fun. It was tremendous challenge and learning and growth and development. But over time, I started having feelings of I wasn't as motivated and more burnout, even though I'm a hard worker and I enjoy work. And after some reflection time, I realized that part of it was a values drift, that there started to become a misalignment between my personal values and some of the decisions that we as a senior management team were taking. And so obviously, once I realized that, it's a question of kind of fighting for it. And at some point, either you have enough values alignment to stay and work it out, or there isn't. And then you really need to make a change.
I wanted to talk related to that about something that you call the traps of living and how that applies here and can apply here specifically with people that are in sales roles.
So this is really important. I think it's a gap in the leadership space, in the personal development space, where there's a lot of focus on what you started with, Will, which is the importance of knowing our strengths and our passions and our purpose and our values, maybe even having a vision of the good life and a vision of professional success. And I am a big believer in all of those. However, what's often neglected and will get us into trouble is the fact that we all fall into traps in life that inhibit our happiness, our quality of life, and our fulfillment. And we all have leadership and professional derailers that take us off course from our professional success. And often those things are difficult, so we avoid them. We put them out of our consciousness, or some of them are actually at the level of our subconscious. It's important for us to actually be aware of those so that we can work on them and improve them. Otherwise, we're like a broken record. And those traps will just keep playing and they will affect our performance, our motivation, our success, our happiness. And so a lot of people go on in those traps for years, maybe even decades. So part of my work lately in my new book is a focus on bringing these traps to the forefront and what do we do about them.
Can we talk about some of the examples that can bring this to life for the listeners? I'd love to explore some of those.
Absolutely. And I've got some new data on this. So I started with 60 common traps of living, and I've had a traps test on my website, and many hundreds of people around the world have been filling it out. And so I now know that some of the top traps are things like overthinking, burnout, negative self-talk, postponing the things that we really want to do and deferring our dreams, self-doubt, comparing ourselves to other people in ways that are not helpful. And another big one is lacking enough clarity on the key things in our lives. So maybe we have a sense of our purpose and our values, but we're not really clear and focused on them, as well as a really specific vision of what success looks like for us in the next 10 years, over the lifetime, etc. Many more examples, but those are some of the most common traps.
And some of the common ones that you talk about, we've explored for a long time in our work with sales organizations. I'd love for you to articulate more about a few of them that stood out. So the negative self-talk one, where does that come from and how do you manage that?
This was really surprising to me when I did the TRAPS test and put it out, how common negative self-talk is, how many of us, and even high achievers, struggle with this. It just blew my mind. So there's a lot of people out there who are suffering silently and quietly. So to me, it's an inner dialogue that makes us feel flawed, unacceptable, not enough. And I likened it to a mental prison that we've put ourselves in and that we have the key to, and yet we stay in that prison. We're essentially our own worst enemy. We're shooting ourselves in the foot. And I think often it can come from influences like parents and our upbringing, our peers, teachers, coaches, and mentors. Sometimes people were overly harsh on us, maybe even with a heart to help because they wanted us to be the best that we could be. But we humans take in the negative so much more than we take in the positive. There's a kind of negativity bias. Of course, we could also have some negative experiences, some failures, some real problems, and those tend to linger with us. And it has real implications. I mean, it affects our confidence. It affects our motivation and our performance, as well as our happiness. It's something we really want to pay attention to and learn how to address.
And related to negative self-talk, are the other ones that I wanted to talk more about are self-doubt and the self-limiting beliefs. All three of those things overlap. But what about those two, self-doubt and self-limiting beliefs? Because I think people, especially in sales roles, they do have that internal belief of this is what I'm capable of, most often setting the bar way too low for themselves.
Self-doubt, I view as lacking confidence or questioning our capabilities and our potential. And this can be in some areas. In some areas, maybe we don't have this. And so it's this kind of, what if I make a mistake? What if I fail? What if I don't close the deal? What if I don't hit my numbers? And there's a writer, Tara Brach, who has this expression that really hit me. She says, a lot of us are walking around in what she calls a trance of unworthiness. We feel not fully worthy, not enough. And so I think at the root of this is fear. And so fear of failure and the judgment that will come from not being enough. And it's judgment from others that we care about, but it's also harsh self-judgment. We have this inner judge where we're just brutal to ourselves, back to the negative self-talk. And so it's got real implications. And then the limiting beliefs are our mindsets about ourselves that hold us back. So very common, some people think, I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not a leader. So they self-select out of leadership as if it's something you either have or you don't, as if it's something you can't develop. I'm not creative is a big one. I'm bad at math. I'm not good at public speaking. And often there's some kind of history of this. So maybe in junior high school, you were up at an assembly and you said something, you flubbed it or whatever, you felt nervous and your adrenaline was going, and a couple of people chuckled. And to you, that became this event for the rest of your life. You tell yourself this fictitious story. I'm not good at public speaking. When in fact, it's just a skill. Nobody is good at public speaking at the beginning. Some people have more natural, innate ability and talent than others, but we all have to work on things and develop things. And so that gets to our mindset about things. And so these limiting beliefs can be very problematic.
And then Greg, one other one that I think often salespeople struggle with is overthinking. They can get in their own heads. They're jumping to assumptions, and that can be things like when a client hasn't got back to them, or they're making assumptions about something their manager told them or inversely didn't tell them, that sort of thing. Overthinking can be another thing that falls into this, doesn't it?
To me, this is a big surprise how many people struggle with this. If you look at the research, they estimate about 73% of us struggle with overthinking. I've seen more informal estimates as high as 99% of us. And so I've experienced this personally. I remember going back to the situation we talked about earlier, where I was not as motivated for a while. I wasn't sure why. I found myself going for a run around a lake here in Colorado to think about, essentially, should I stay or should I go? And there's a beautiful mountain view over there on the side. And at some point, after months of these runs, I stopped. I'm like, hello, it's just telling me something that I keep just having the same question over and over. It's telling me something, but I was overthinking it. And it really shows up in a couple of different modes. One is rumination, which is something where we've got this kind of involuntary compulsive thinking and negative thought loops. If you're lying awake at night, just running around and you're going in circles, you're not getting anywhere. And then another form is just worrying. Often we're worrying about the future. How's it going to go with my presentation or this big account? Or we're actually worrying about the past, like how we were perceived and whatnot. And so it's just really not productive. So we need to be able to manage these and step out of these traps.
All these examples that you've been sharing, they directly tie into what you've talked about as avoidance behaviors, then staying in our comfort zones, that a lot of salespeople can experience that, don't they? Where else do these avoidance behaviors, and for salespeople, that can be things like avoiding pursuing larger, more complex deals, or the amount of time that they spend prospecting, other ways to recognize those avoidance behaviors and head them off?
Avoidance, I think, will show up commonly also with conflict, for example. And so there's difficult situations where there's some awkwardness, and often that's with a conflict. That's definitely one of them. And I think part of what's going on here, Will, is that our brains are working against us the way that our brains have evolved. We get this kind of automatic response from our nervous system, that where we get flooded with stress hormones like cortisol or adrenaline spikes, we sweat, our heart rate goes. And so it's very uncomfortable. And we just have it hardwired into us. That's like the tiger on the savanna. And so avoid those situations. Also awkward is feedback, right? Where we tend to avoid giving and receiving feedback because of that awkwardness, because of that judgment and whatnot. So I think part of what we need to do is become more self-aware and better at grounding ourselves, centering ourselves with simple things. If you're eating well, if you're moving your body, if you're sleeping well, that will set you up to be more optimal in terms of your physical and the combination of your mental and your physical, but also just breathing through things. If you're in a meeting, things are getting heated, just quietly just taking deeper, slower breaths. And your mindset, Will, is this is the good stuff. This hard stuff is the opportunity for growth, for development, for breakthroughs. So almost welcoming those things that are hard that we typically want to avoid. Avoiding is the easy path. That's what almost everybody does. But if you really want to step up your sales game or whatever game you're playing in sports or performance or whatnot, as a parent, as a manager, stepping into the swamp of uncertainty and those difficult challenges and learning to get more comfortable there, that's part of the job, and that's the opportunity for breakthrough.
Avoidance is the easy path, but it's not the fulfilling path. There's no sort of perceived value there. And you talked about feedback. We're going to talk about that a little bit later when we're talking about sales leaders. But some of the things that, before we moved on, I wanted to just touch on some of these things, the negative self-talk, the self-doubt, self-limiting beliefs, overthinking. Those are the things that really fall into the role that of coaching and what sales leaders should be focusing their coaching time on, right?
As I said, so many of us struggle with this, and we have a tendency not to ask for help, to want to push through it and want to do it alone. We don't make ourselves vulnerable and reach out and ask for coaching, or even if we have coaching, we're very limited because of our ego in terms of what we share about what we're struggling with. And so coaching, as well as mentoring, and even just reaching out to trusted relationships. So you can do this with a spouse or partner, you can do this with a close friend, where you can have these conversations of vulnerability of something that you're struggling with. And where there's a safe environment, you just have a sounding board where you don't have somebody in there just trying to fix you and tell you, you need to do this, because that's not always the best thing. But it's an area where you can jointly explore together, facing the same direction, you're on the same team. And sometimes it's a trusted small group, a peer group, where you go around and each week or each month you focus on a different person and they have an opportunity to share what they're struggling through. And so this process of having a holding environment with a coach or some other person or people can be very powerful in helping us get unstuck and stop negative habits like avoiding things.
We talked on just a couple episodes ago with a guest who was talking about peer mentoring as a critical component that's complementary to, but different from coaching, that there's a lot of value there. And I think what you're saying earlier is absolutely true. A lot of salespeople, they're physically detached just because they're working remotely, they're working from home. Salespeople they tend to be more individualistic going it alone. And they also tend to want to not communicate things that aren't positive. They don't want to communicate things that aren't moving forward, progressing, deals that aren't progressing or closing. And that can lead to some of those things you're talking about that can end up walling them off. They're not asking for feedback because maybe they don't want to get into the discussions. And it's really then up to the sales leader to pull them out and pull out from them what's going on.
This is a real opportunity for sales leaders, I think. If you create an environment where this is part of what you focus on, where this is naturally what people do, they have conversations about this, they talk about it, they give each other feedback, they have coaching. It's something that really draws salespeople and other people to the organization, to that manager. They see, wow, this person really cares about me. They're really investing in me. And you can jointly raise the performance and create a culture of this where it's deliberately developmental. And so this is something untapped. So many people don't do this enough. And so for sales leaders and their organizations, it can be a real step up in terms of performance and retention, motivation.
Because retention remains such a magnified issue within sales organizations versus other parts of the companies. Retention among sales teams is something like 3 times worse than just about anywhere else. And some of the things you're talking about can really help tether them better to the organization. That values and purpose alignment, like you said, if they feel that the organization and their leader is invested, not only their performance, but their success and fulfillment, it does certainly buoy those things, doesn't it?
And sales is a tough job. It can be real tough. It's a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity to add value. It's great training and development, but it can be tough. And I think a lot of people are focused on the outer game. There's obviously skills and things that are really important that you need to teach and develop. But I think this inner game of the things that we're talking about, a lot of the traps are this internal mental. It's our negative self-talk. It's our own limiting beliefs. It's our self-doubt and leads us to avoid, which leads to performance problems, et cetera. And so we have to really get better at working on the inner game and not just the outer game so much.
Our late founder, Ron Willingham, one of the books that he wrote is called The Inner Game of Selling. It's all about those things. We've talked on this show before about the importance of things like self-awareness and mindfulness. And I know you talk a lot about self-awareness. And so I'd love for you to talk with us about why self-awareness is important and how you can develop it, something that you call discover mode.
So we've known that self-awareness is important for literally thousands of years. If you go back to the ancient Greeks, Oracle of Delphi, know thyself. And yet I think we still struggle with it. And one of the reasons I think is that a lot of us are impatient and we skip over it and we get right to other stuff. And we take that, the depth of the self-awareness and the fact that we need to keep cycling back. So the way I talk about it is a lot of us professionally, especially high achievers, and people who have targets that they need to hit, you can get caught up in what I call climbing mode. And you're so focused on climbing and advancing your career and salary and bonus and things. By the way, there's nothing wrong with climbing mode. I love climbing mode. It's great for you. It's fun. You learn, grow, and develop, and you earn. You can do great things with that. But what we neglect is what I call, as you said, discover mode. And discover mode is stepping back to really go back again and go deep into who am I? What's the context right now and how are things going and why and what truly motivates me? And then using that and designing our work around that awareness. And I think a lot of people don't do that. And then you get caught up in, if you're just in climbing mode, you get disconnected from others. It's all about ego. It takes you away from yourself. So to me, it's this iterative process. We need to act and reflect. And I call that warrior sage. And this, by the way, can really help us when we hit a crisis or a real problem. This becomes our safe harbor because we've done that work. And so we have that clarity. We have that sense of it, personal integrity and wholeness that can get us through those tough moments.
And you're right. There's nothing wrong with that climber mode, but you've got to set aside time for the reflection along the way. You got to take those breaks and take stock of where you are.
it's really easy to skip over those. And then next day you skip over them, next week, and you end up totally neglecting it. Then it'll catch up with you.
One of the articles you wrote recently that I really liked and thought was relevant for this discussion and the audience was on the power of reframing to change your outlook. Can you share some of the ideas that you wrote in that?
Reframing is one of these trap busters that will help us get out of a bunch of the traps that we've been talking about, like negative self-talk and limiting beliefs and self-doubt. Reframing, and there's a kind of a term that cognitive reframing, is a well-researched phenomenon where we can take a difficult situation or something that we're struggling with, and we have what's called cognitive flexibility. Our brains are really remarkable, and we don't have to be stuck in those old patterns. And so we can literally reframe. So a simple example would be, I can't do this. There's something they've asked you to do. They threw you into a management role and you got 10 people and you feel overwhelmed and you feel incompetent. And so you say, I can't do this yet. You just add the word yet. And it opens up the possibility of, what do I need to learn? What do I need to figure out? Who do I need to ask for help? Who do I need to go to for coaching and mentoring? What books do I need to read? What podcast do I need to listen to? And eventually, another example, I think Quincy Jones, the music producer, likes to talk about, he says, I don't have problems. Problems are lame. Problems are a bummer. He says, I have puzzles. So it's a puzzle. It's, huh, what's going on there? I don't know yet why this is happening or how to solve it. But puzzles are fun. I can be curious and it gets my mind using my advanced prefrontal cortex instead of that more primal kind of fear where you feel stuck and you shut down. So you can tap into that higher thinking and your inner wisdom and your creativity and whatnot. Simple reframes can actually make a big difference.
They can help reduce anxiety, stress. They can help with the things we talked about earlier, like negative self-talk.
So that's why we need to start with leading ourselves before we get too into leading others. So as we lead others, if we still have too much anxiety and stress and these fears and whatnot, we're not going to be optimizing our performance. We're certainly not going to be leading other people well. So we need to make sure that we have those fundamentals covered.
That's a good transition now to talk a little bit about, from a sales leadership standpoint, let's talk about the importance of thinking about what you've called your leadership quest. And how that relates to your work on Triple Crown leadership?
So that's a book I wrote with my father, who's a 5-time CEO and did turnarounds, Triple Crown Leadership. We start with this observation, which is Stephen R. Covey. One of the habits was begin with the end in mind. And often we forget to do that or we neglect it. And so from a leadership perspective, what is your quest? There's going to be some adventure. There's going to be some journey you and your team, your organization need to go on. Think about the Lord of the Rings and the ring quest. In that case, the quest was clear. It was a ring and Mordor. But often, what kind of organization or team are you trying to build? Are you really clear about it? And have you really gotten some input? And so for us, why we call it Triple Crown Leadership is a metaphor from horse racing. And it's got three aspects. One is, why not aim to be excellent? Number two, aim to be ethical. It goes back to integrity. It's built in the name of your company. And the third thing is enduring. And so not just excellent with great results, but done the right way and done over time. Can you sustain excellent and ethical over time and be sustainable? So that's one way to think about, what's your quest? Build a team that's excellent and ethical and enduring. And that's very motivating, I think, for a lot of people, for you and your team. So yeah, I want to be part of that because that's rare and that's amazing. And that'll be super fun. And I'll be very proud to talk to people if we can be on the quest to be achieving those rare qualities.
And of course, the ethical and integrity piece, which, like you said, we talk a lot about because it's in our organization's name, but that's often one of the stickiest things that ties somebody to an organization from a values alignment standpoint. They need to know that the organization that they're representing, that the leaders that they're working for are acting ethically in the customer's best interest, backing up what they say, all those sorts of things. And leaders, they really need to model and embrace that, don't they?
In fact, there's some really powerful data on that. So if you look at Kuzes and Posner wrote the book, The Leadership Challenge, which is a classic book in leadership teaching, but also practitioners around the world. And they surveyed people and they said, what are the characteristics of admired leaders? So they ask people around the world, what do you want in a manager? And they've got hundreds of thousands of responses over decades from around the world. And the number one thing people look for in a manager is honesty. And this is by far, and it's been over time. And related to that is your, obviously, your character, the courage to honor your character, and the credibility that comes with being straightforward, trusting people, being trustworthy, being open and transparent. And if you don't have honesty and integrity and character, it's very demotivating for people. They won't give their best, and it can be very destructive, but you'll also lose your best people. And so people really want that. And a lot of people don't realize it, so they don't focus on it.
And from a sales context, you want your leaders to be modeling the behaviors that you want your salespeople to then be modeling with customers. That's where it all has to start. Every customer relationship is built on trust and integrity and follow through and all of those things.
You said the word relationship. And so the relationship between the leader and the follower, it's really, a lot of people think about leadership in terms of traits, which is a very old fashioned way, and you know, behaviors, but it's also that relationship of that influence process. In much the same way that a salesperson and a customer, it's a relationship. And the person, are they going to be skeptical? Are they going to be inhibited? But if you can establish trust and show them that you're a good person and you're curious about, you'd like to help them, you'd like to serve them, you'd like to help solve their problems. And if not now, maybe later, and that's okay. You know, it really sets a different tone in that relationship. It comes back to things like trust and your personal characteristics and character.
Getting back to what we touched on a little bit earlier around feedback, how does feedback tie into what we're talking about around relationships and trust and creating ethical sales cultures, things like that? Because again, two-way feedback is important. The leaders need to be giving feedback and open and honest feedback with their representatives. And the sales reps need to have the confidence or vulnerability to ask up for feedback too.
Feedback, I think, is something we're doing very poorly. There's just a lot of bad feedback and lack of feedback. Again, there's data on, if you look at the thing, you survey managers in terms of things they do regularly. One of the things that they do the least is asking for feedback. Let's take it from both directions. If you're good at asking for feedback, you're actually truly open to the feedback and you truly solicit the feedback and you thank the person and then you follow up on the feedback and you show them that you've, wow, that's just a credibility booster. People are like, wow. Even if that person has flaws, as we all do, that's just so rare. And obviously there's so much you can learn because we all have blind spots. That kind of receiving feedback, we're bad at that. But we're also bad at giving feedback. And that's something not only for managers, but for peers to give each other feedback. One of the reasons is that feedback is awkward and uncomfortable. And so a lot of people get this automatic negative response trigger because it's not being done well. And then you're like, oh my God, that was awful. I'd never want to do that again. As opposed to having a regular feedback sessions. My word, that's the way to improve. We all need to check in and establish what's going on, what isn't. And feedback is a great mechanism for doing that.
Feedback as a component of coaching overall. And as you said, it's got to be something that's regular and consistent. It can't be a one-off. It can't be like once every 5 months. There's got to be a degree of rigor and consistency to it.
And it's got to be timely too. So not only regular in terms of a cadence of kind of, you could build it much quicker, but at least quarterly, not just the annual thing. Even after the fact, something happened in a meeting or there was some kind of thing with an account, like right away so that it's timely. And we need to go into it, into feedback with this mentality of service and humility. How can I give feedback in such a way that it's received by the person and truly helpful to them? And that changes your mind as opposed to judging them and telling them what they're doing wrong. We need to pay attention to our positive to negative ratio. And we also need to be humble because as we're giving feedback, we assume that we know all the details and we know the content. There may be some very important things that we're missing so we can give our perspective. But then be open. Hey, what do you think? Does that land with you? And maybe there's some other nuances, et cetera. And then we need to make it very specific as well. And so that the person, it truly lands with the person so that it's user friendly.
as you said, feedback and coaching discussions, they don't have to be some formalized scheduled thing. And you want to have that as a part of it, but coaching moments, they exist every day. And those can be 30 second, 90 second conversations immediately after a meeting. They can be by phone. They can be by text. Sometimes those opportunities exist every single day. It doesn't have to be some formalized scheduled 1 hour sit down.
And even better, if you make those more often instances like you're talking about, say, hey, I'm giving you feedback here. By the way, can you give me some feedback too? And then what you do is you set yourself up as peers on the same page, on the same team. We're just interested in helping each other get better so that we as a team can get better, so that we can achieve the mission of the organization instead of this kind of top-down dynamic where I am dispensing my feedback to you and you must listen to me.
Relates to what you talked about before around reframing. Part of what leaders, especially people that get into sales leadership roles, they've been elevated into a manager role because they were a great individual performer. They need to reframe the context of their role. And one of the words you said earlier is around serving the other person. You're serving them. You're not dictating on high. You're serving their needs. And part of doing that is through regular, consistent feedback.
When you're talking about that, Will, it reminded me of one of the interviews we did for Triple Crown Leadership. We interviewed leaders in 61 organizations in 11 countries for that book and said, what does it take to become excellent and ethical and enduring? We interviewed Google and Spotify and all turnaround companies, social enterprises, nonprofits, Air Force entities. So one of the leaders, this was Tony Hsieh, who used to lead Zappos, talked about the org chart of Zappos. If you look at the organization chart, you've got the kind of the board and the CEO on the top and the senior management team and different layers of management, departmental heads and all the way down. And he says, no, that's upside down. You got to flip that. The CEO is on the bottom serving everybody in the organization, blocking and tackling, getting rid of problems and inefficiencies. How can I serve you? That's the way to think about leader. It goes back to Robert Greenleaf, servant leadership, which is one of the most powerful, effective leadership theories out there.
We talked about the issue of retention and how that's such a critical and can be a very expensive issue for companies when they're facing high retention problems. How can leaders prevent burnout, and burnout, one of the factors that leads to turnover? How can leaders prevent burnout in the sales teams that they're serving and in themselves? Because when you talk about retention and sales organization, that can relate to people that are in the leadership roles too. So can you talk a bit about preventing burnout on your teams and in yourself?
And I'm glad you asked, because burnout is really an epidemic these days. It's become a much bigger problem. And of course, we're more aware of it. And it's even gone down to younger and younger people. You're seeing it early career. You're not after 20 years. You're seeing it in high school. You're seeing it among school children too. And so it's something we need to address. And I think a lot of it relates to the stuff that we've been talking about. Burnout is a state of emptiness. Other people liken it to rust out, where we're not being purposeful. We're not living our values. We're not using our strengths and our passions. And so this kind of going back to the clarity and the self-awareness and some of these self-leadership aspects. But one of the things from the research, Will, that I like comes from Professor Amy Rusnewski at the Yale School of Management. It's called job crafting. And I think it's a very powerful thing to help individuals and teams avoid burnout. It's got three dimensions. Okay. She says, we should take more responsibility for actively, intentionally crafting our work, as opposed to just receiving the job description and just putting our head down. And this can be actually beneficial for us and our performance and the organization. It's a little counterintuitive because you go off script a little bit. And so there's three elements, just very briefly. One is that we change the way that we think about our job. And so this is a reframe like we talked about earlier. So it's called cognitive crafting. Oh, I have to do this kind of thing. And you attach it to things that are more purposeful for you. And like service would be a great way to think about it. In any job, there are ways you can serve people with hard work and quality and just going the extra mile. If you're a custodian in the high school or in the hospital or whatnot, there's an act of service that's beautiful there, right? Number two is you craft the tasks that you're working on and work with your manager to make sure you're doing more in your areas of strengths and less in your area of weakness, and forming a team where you have better use of the collective strength. And the final one is relationship crafting. And so there are some people in your organization or whatnot that kind of bring us up versus down. There's some great, brilliant people who inspire us. And so how can we actively work on spending more time asking for help from the great people, or asking them for coffee or for a lunch, and crafting our relationships to get us less time with the toxic or the energy vampires and more time with the people who, now we can't always do this. There's a team, there's a job responsibilities, but there's actually often a lot that you can do if you are credible, competent, if you show goodwill in the organization, your manager will work with you to allow you to craft these three areas, your task, your relationship, and the way you think about your job. And that can help you avoid burnout because it could really be a step up in your experience with work as well as your performance.
And part of that can also be around collaborative goal setting. That's one of the biggest things that salespeople struggle with is goal setting. And often what happens is they then again, get goals handed down to them from above. But that active involvement in setting their own goals motivates them more, and they take a greater sense of ownership and purpose around those things, and they're far more likely to hit them. The other thing you talked about was around leaning into your strengths. We had a recent episode of the podcast that was all about that idea of the power of leaning into your strengths and not trying to be good at everything across the board, because that can absolutely stave off burnout.
And there's really good research on the importance of kind of focusing more on your strengths and less on the weakness prevention model. It comes from the Gallup organization. What you said just before that about the collaborative process, I second the motion. And so in our book, Triple Crown Leadership, one of the practices for becoming excellent, ethical, and enduring is what we call alignment. And so we've got a 10-step alignment model, and in the middle there is goal setting. And the key about your purpose, your values, your vision, your goals and your strategy is to set them collaboratively. Don't impose them from the top and just expect people to say, oh, okay, I'm fully bought in and I love it. You want to have a dialogue with people and invite them into the process so that the workers and the managers and the senior executives all collaboratively have a dialogue. Now, ultimately, some people have to make the call on what are the final goals. If it's a true collaborative process, people are like, wow, they listen to me. They asked me, I was heard, so I am in because I was part of the process. So doing it collaboratively is key.
That's so powerful. Greg, this has really been a really good conversation. I want to appreciate and thank you for your time and spending it with the audience here. So thanks again for being with us today.
I want to thank you, Will. It's been a pleasure, and I appreciate all the really good work that you're doing in your organization. It's impressive. So thanks.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for saying that. For our listeners, you can follow Greg Vanarek on LinkedIn. You'll also find him on Twitter at G Vanarek. That's G-V-A-N-O-U-R-E-K. You can also find and read more from Greg on his websites, gregvanarek.com, triplecrownleadership.com. Greg mentioned the book, Triple Crown Leadership, which we highly recommend. So check all those things out and stay connected with Greg. And thank you to everybody for listening and taking time out of your day or evening, wherever you might be listening to this. We always appreciate the time you take to participate in this show. As always, please tell a friend or colleague about us. Leave a comment or rating or review about the show. We always appreciate the feedback and use it to help develop the content and quality of the show further. So thank you to everybody for listening, and we'll hope to have you join us again next time. Thank you for listening, and I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed, and as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.